everyone, and thank you for listening to Lit Radio podcast. I'm your host, Teja, and today I'm joined by Ivan Young. We will talk about his book, The Pharaoh Speech, Unearthing Ancient Egyptian Wisdom for Sales Success. Ivan is the co-president of the European Mentoring and Coaching Council Asia-Pacific Region and the head of Global Social Initiatives with EMCC Global. He is a successful sales coach and mentor to sales professionals, startup founders, and CEOs. Over the last two decades, Ivan has helped multinationals and startups build multi-million dollar businesses from the ground up. As Ivan demonstrates in the Pharaoh speech, the time of ancient Egypt is one of the greatest in our history and offers fascinating narratives and lessons for today's salesperson. Through a synergy of practical insights, human psychology, and lessons from the ancient Egyptians, this book will guide you on a transformative journey to becoming an effective salesperson. Hi, Ivan. It's a great pleasure to have you with us on Lit Radio podcast. How are you today?
Good. It's in the evening here in Hong Kong, but I feel fantastic.
Great. And I'm looking forward to talking with you about your new book, The Pharaoh Speech. So my first question is, why did you decide to write it?
Well, the decision to write The Pharaoh Speech came about during COVID, during lockdown. And I believe that post-COVID, I postulated that the economy is going to be quite poor. And everyone from experienced hire to graduates will need to learn how to sell. And then I thought it's a good idea to write a book about selling skill based on my experience in selling. I've been selling for the past 15 years, helping three major companies start their businesses in Asia from zero. And I thought I can actually impart some of these skills to them. Now, the idea to write the Pharaoh's pitch about actually cross the selling skill with Egyptian history came from my wife, actually. She knows me very well. She knows that I love history. I love Egypt. She said, why don't you just write it from the angle of an Egyptian, ancient Egyptian history? And I thought that was quite a creative and brilliant idea. And I attempted to write it. And voila, we have the book, The Pharaoh's Pitch, today.
Yeah, and we need to take your wife then for such a good idea. But before you talk more about the book, could you tell us a little bit more about the whole writing process? What did you do to write the book?
Well, I practice writing the concept of writing daily, and I write about 300 words a day, or 300 to 500 words a day. So when I reach 500 words, for example, I'll stop writing, and then I'll let that, that even if I have a strong desire to continue writing, I'll keep that for tomorrow. So when tomorrow I restart, I have this flow again. And then again, when I reach 300 or 500 words as I plan it to be, I'll stop writing and let that continue the next day. So I continue writing for Monday to Sunday nonstop. And then that's how I can produce the book, actually.
Well, I think that's a very disciplined approach where you write a certain number of words every day. But it seems like it works really well. Okay, so you did mention that the idea of writing the book based on ancient Egyptian wisdom came from your wife. But why do you think ancient Egypt is a really good source of wisdom about sales success?
Well, I think ancient Egypt is actually one of the most oldest civilizations in the world. And I'm a big fan of the mummies, the pyramids, and of course, I've watched almost all the movies about mummies from Hollywood. But what's important is that I feel that a lot of people say that you learn from the mistakes of history, but I think you can learn a lot of positive things from history. So, for example, a lot of people felt that the pyramids are built by aliens or built by giants. But to me, it's built by a human like you and I today, who has a thought, a vision to say that I want to have pyramids, or I want to have the pyramids to do certain thing, or I want to have a pyramids for the purpose of achieving a good afterlife. So they decided that on their mind as an individual, as a human being, create the vision and then find ways to create that pyramid. Now, until today, I don't think everyone can explain fully how ancient Egyptians did build the pyramids or the Sphinx without having the modern tools that they had today, that we have today. But they somehow managed to do it because there was a thought, there was a vision, and there was a will to actually make this happen. So now, ancient Egypt not just produced pyramids and the mummies, but they have individuals like that that make history for us. For example, you have Imhotep, who actually built the first pyramid for the pharaoh Djoser. So before Imhotep and before Djoser, all the pharaohs and all the kings were actually just buried in a rectangular flat roofed tomb called the mastabas. And Imhotep had just stacked six of these together, and then with one getting smaller on top of each other, and he created the first step pyramid. Now, but Imhotep is not an engineer, like, or just an engineer. He's actually a priest, a scribe, and he's actually better known to be a healer, actually. And there's actually evidence from the Edith Smith Papyrus that talk about all the kind of healing that he did. The record that he did was so modern. Some historians actually say that modern medicine didn't come from the Greek, but actually come from Imhotep. But this same gentleman is able to create the pyramid. And of course, you can also draw from Cleopatra, how she managed to get two Roman conquerors to actually throw their lots with her, how she managed to sell that, so to speak, to sell that vision to them, not just to Julius Caesar, but also to Anthony. Now, and of course, even the Nile itself is a source of positive lessons for us. The Niles will actually flood its bank every year. To a lot of people, that's not a good news because your banks get flooded with water. But to the Egyptians, the flooding of the Nile actually marks the beginning of the new year for them on the calendar because it's actually something good for them. You can actually the soil becomes fertile. They can actually do agriculture. So now, from sales perspective, sales, in my opinion, you faces a lot of this sort of a vision, having a vision first, or you have difficulties like the flooding. What do you do with it? And then, do you have the motivation and will to continue to create that sense of solidarity with your clients, like how Cleopatra did, a shared vision so that they can come on board to what you're selling? So I think from ancient Egypt, you can draw so much wisdom and so much history that you can educate us on how you can actually create something with almost nothing. And sales is like that. You're creating a vision that's not apparent yet. Maybe the example would be, if today you buy a car, you're not buying a car for the car. You're actually buying for what a vision that you can create with the car. So if you're a new parent, you're not going to buy a sports car because the vision of a sports car, you can't put your baby chair, you can't put your baby in there, it's not safe. But you're trying to create a vision where your baby is safe, you're taking the baby to the zoo, and that's the kind of vision you're projecting with the car. Then you buy the car. So I find a lot of parallel comparison between sales and ancient Egypt and how the ancient Egypt wisdom come about. So that's how I got about writing about the sales success from ancient Egypt.
Fascinating. I think that's a very interesting point of view of sales and how we can learn from ancient Egypt. But before we discuss more the lessons that you write about in the book from ancient Egypt, interestingly, you say that anyone can be a good salesman and it's not something that you're born with. So why do you believe so?
Because at the end of the day, everyone has sold before in a certain part of their life. They have done some selling. So how do I know that for sure? Because all of us has been a children before. All of us have children. All of us have been a child before. Have you ever seen how a girl or baby girl try to convince her father to buy her the sweets? Have you ever seen how a boy try to convince a mother to buy the toy for him? I promise to work, to do my homework. I promise not watching cartoons. If you buy this toy for me, that is actually sales, Or I promise to do well in school. So he's actually creating a vision for the mother. Look, if you buy me this toy, the vision that comes is that I'll score 100 marks in my mathematics to come. Or the girl says to the daddy, like, oh, if you buy me this sweet, I'll be a good girl. I'll listen to you. I'll listen to all your instructions from now onwards. You buy me the sweets. She's also projecting a vision for the father. Look, if you buy this for me, I'll give you that vision. That vision will come to reality. So both this child, the boy and the girl, they are selling. So all of us, in a point of our time, were a boy and a girl before. So we have negotiated with our parents. We have actually sold vision to our parents. So in us, there's this ability to sell. So that's why in the book, every single chapter, although it explains the story from ancient Egypt, it's actually talking about a behavior that's all in all of us that all of us can do. For example, visioning skills. having a kindness, leadership skill, building trust, and emotional intelligence, all these are all tied to us being human. So I believe that everyone has the ability to sell, but can you bring out enough of it, or can you train yourself to be more aware of it? So that's the key to becoming a good salesman or salesperson.
Yeah, and to follow up on that, what are the main capabilities that make up a good salesman?
I think one of the key things about a good salesman is, are you kind enough in your heart? So do you put your customers' win above your win? Now, don't get me wrong. I think as a sales, you need to win because you need a commission to pay a salary to actually have a good life. But at the same, but can you put that subservient to your client's needs first? So your client needs to win their personal win before you can win. So are you kind enough to do that for them? So I mean, many of the times when I used to attend sales training, they tell you that you need to love your client. So I have a lot of issue with that because I've never met him or her before. I don't even know what makes them happy, or I don't know what makes them sad. I don't know what actually motivates them. How can I love this person that I have not met before in my life? Sometimes you go for a meeting, first time ever you meet this person and you're supposed to love him or her. You can't do that because I'll do a lot of training without you to love your client. But then later I found that to love your client is actually to help them win their personal win, to gain what they want to build for themselves first. And if you can do that, that's love with action, I feel. So love with action. And then you can, if you're kind enough to help them do that, you actually let them win first before you collect your winning. I think that is the main capability of a good salesman.
That's very interesting. Could you please expand a little bit on that and tell us why being kind is very important for the success of a sales career? And well, how can salespeople be kind?
So actually, selling with kindness, to me, sales is selling with kindness. So you sell, but you're with kindness. But that concept doesn't exist in psychology for sales. That concept came from the nurses. So imagine someone is hurt, got in an accident, getting a ward after surgery, then the person that takes care of the patient are the nurses. The nurses come and force this person to do certain exercises that will help them get better. Help him get better or help her get better. At that point, when the nurse forces the patient to do those exercises, whatever that is, it's painful for the patient. But the nurse knows if you do this today, 6 months, 3 months down the road, you will achieve something that's been, you'll recover, and you recover back to your old self. You'll do well 3 to 6 months later. But that patient at that moment doesn't know that. In fact, all that patient feels this pain. I don't want to do this. But if the nurse is kind enough, yet, encourage or forces that person to actually go and do that exercise necessary for his or her recovery, then that thing will only happen 3 to 6 months down the road after he got discharged from the hospital. The nurses may not be get that thank you from that person. Not necessarily someone will come back and say, thank you for forcing me to go through that pain. That is kindness. So that is, to me, selling is parallel to that. You are selling, you're forcing someone to come away with money, hard-earned money to buy something from you, but he or she may not see the benefit of what they are buying much later down the road. They need to trust in you that what you say is correct. So if you're kind enough, they trust you that you're kind, that you have their interests first, they will then buy from you. So that's why it's important to have kindness in a salesperson. So you sell with kindness. People can feel it, people can trust you because the promise comes much later and they don't see it today. But in fact, when they buy from you, they're feeling pain, pain in your pockets, of course. So that's how I believe a good salesperson should have kindness, and that will mark a successful salesperson.
Absolutely, that's really fascinating. But now I will move to some of the chapters of the book because I would like to discuss a few of them with you today. So the first one is about discovering purpose. So why is that so important for salespeople? And most importantly, how can they find their purpose?
Yes. So when I decided to write this book from ancient Egypt, the first thing I stumbled upon was a picture of Howard Carter. So Howard Carter discovered the King Tut's tomb. But the thing is, lot of people doesn't know that Howard Carter is not an Egyptologist by training. He actually self-trained himself. He's actually just a sketch artist, a painter, if you would like. But he discovered this idea of Egyptologists that he can actually find, and there's a chance that he will find this tomb of King Tut, and he put himself into this. So now, in his opportunity, I mean, in his adventure to actually discover the King Tut's tomb, he actually also went and left and then served in the army for World War I. He still came back. Now, the financier of this endeavor, Lord Carnarvon, has already started selling his estate because he cannot finance it anymore. It's losing money. And at that point, Howard Carter even actually offered to go do it without money so that he can continue this journey of finding this, this King Tut's tomb. So why is that the case? Because Howard Carter he was very clear of the purpose of his life. So as he grew older and in his ailing health, he didn't give up on this. He was still recording and sketching about the content that he had discovered in King Tut's tomb all the way to his death. So he was celebrated when he first discovered the tomb, but at the point of his death, it was a very quiet affair. But he didn't care about that. He was still continuing working, documenting the artifacts that he discovered from King Tut's tomb. So this is the thing. For a salesperson, I think it's important to know why you want to go into sales. It's a tough job. People have a bad perception about salespeople. People think that salespeople comes around to just cheat money to get high margin. People think that salespeople are quite cunning because it carries all these wrong connotations. If you just go out there and carry a name card that says you're a salesperson, you already get discounted on your trustworthiness, et cetera, et cetera. So if you're a salesperson, if you do not know your purpose, you'll find this very draining. After a while, you want to give up. Now, personally, for me, I want to be a salesperson because I want to have my own business. I want to have one day able to have my own business. And in order to do that, I myself need to learn how to sell. Because if I hire someone to sell my things for me, he will not do it wholeheartedly because he's just an employee. So if I can't even sell my things myself, then no one's going to do it for me. So I need to learn how to sell myself. So when I was so clear about the reason I got into sales is that one day I could have my own business. I can then make sure that my business will not go bankrupt because I can be my own rainmaker as a salesperson. I went through all these difficulties carrying this purpose that it's okay. I can take this rejection because I'm actually learning how to keep my own business alive while working as a salesperson for another company. So your purpose may not be that you want to go into business to be a salesperson. Your purpose could be you want to travel. Your purpose could be you want to meet people. Your purpose could be that you want to, do different things at different time. Your purpose may be that you find that you do not like to sit in an office to do administration work. You want to go out there and run around and let your and face some challenge, go and face some challenges. All sorts of different purposes. So first, that's why in the first chapter, discovering a purpose is very important. And the title of the chapter is An Earl, a Lady, and Egyptologist, because I discovered a photo of them standing on the steps of the opening towards the King Tut's tomb. And that photo was Lord Carnarvon, his daughter, Lady Evelyn, and also Howard Carter taking that photo. And when I stared at that photo, I was like, what is going through their minds when they finally discovered this? When they finally discovered the tomb to King Tutankhamun. So I think that will actually illustrate why I believe purpose should be the first driver of whether you're going to go into sales or not.
Yeah, I think that's a great message because, I mean, it doesn't matter whether it's sales or any other profession, when you're just chasing the money, it never works out in the long run. So I think that's a very important message.
Yes.
So now I'm going to jump to the sixth chapter of the book, which is called The Pharaoh's Speech, which is also the title of the book. So I'm guessing this is a very important chapter in the book. So it is all about building trust. So, Ivan, could you tell us more about that?
Okay, so the idea of the pharaoh's pitch is that sometimes when you're selling, you seem to be pitching to your pharaohs. Because in the good book, the Bible, they tell the stories about how Moses pitched to the pharaoh to let his people go. And every time he refused to do that, then Moses bring forward a curse. Now, even when he sees the curse happening on him or his people, he still refuses to budge. So sometimes selling could be like that. You know this is a good thing for the client, and then the client still refuses to trust you. Refuses to, even when he sees that, okay, it's not good for him, he can see some of the inkling that it's not going to be a good, if he doesn't follow your advice to buy, it's not going to be good for him. He still insists on going on his path. So the Pharaoh's pitch came from that idea that how can you convince someone who you are not a friend with, or you sometimes a stranger that you met for the first time, how do you convince, how do you establish trust in such a short period of time? And I think that's very important, because trustworthiness or trust is actually you telling your client that, one, you're capable of meeting expectations. So when you buy from me, you have certain expectation and I can meet that, because I'm telling you my product or the service I carry will meet your expectation. The second thing is trust is like, it's also not just capable of meeting expectation, but also meeting expectation without defining your own accepted principles. So if you're a salesperson, you feel that this product is not going to be good for the client, but you refuse to sell to the client then because you know it's not going to be good for them, but you will make a lot of money if you sell for them. But your principle is you want to be kind to your client. You want them to have a good, good purchase that bring them, the kind of vision that they want. You will step away from the sales, even though it could make you $1 million. You will refuse to do that. And of course, trust is that you telling your client that not only are you capable of meeting expectations, not only are you capable of meeting expectations in defining your own principles, but you are not going to ask what their vulnerability. Why I say your client will have a vulnerability when they buy from you? Because they don't know whether the product can achieve their vision or not, number one. Most of the time, the things they buy, whether they know what it will work or not, is actually a few months down the road, but they will help them or not. So they are vulnerable. And the people say that you buy on emotions, and a lot of purchases are like that. They buy on emotions and then much later they regret it. So it's purchasing for a client is actually a time of vulnerability. Imagine if you're buying a house and you meet a estate agent. You are vulnerable. It's actually a lifetime of commitment, 20 years minimum to pay for the mortgage. But your vision is not buying a house. Your vision is buying a home. A home is different from a house. A house is a physical thing, but a home is like the neighbors must be good, the surrounding is good for your kids to grow up. This place is, if you're right place, the place is serene, it's actually serene enough for you to actually think and be creative. Those is home. And at that point of time, when you purchase such a large ticket item, trying to bring forth a vision that you have in your head, you're vulnerable. So trust is that I can trust you now that you can help me do that. So it's important to establish trust early. And at the same time, the last thing is like, trust is an interesting thing. Trust is not something that you can tell people, convince people, but it's given to you. It's like a gift. It's given to you. It's like, I trust you. I give you my trust. So how do you get that done? How do you enable that people to give you trust? Because you cannot conjure it, you cannot buy it from them, you cannot give it to them, they give it to you. So I think that's where a good salesman is able to convince the clients they can give them trust by actually being authentic, by being kind, by helping them build a vision, by being authoritative about the matter they're selling. And these are all covered in the book, how you can build trust. That's why chapter six is where you read the book one time from the first page to the last, and then you put it aside. And every time you have issue, all you need to do is go back and read chapter six. And then chapter six will tell you which other chapter you should reach out to. And you then can go and read that chapter to get some ideas on how to solve your problem. So the way I wrote the book is like, it's not a how to book step by step to do this or to do that. But it's a way for you to get in touch with your authentic self based on a sales process. And of course, I've written down my personal experiences in selling, and I hope that the readers can relate to that and then find their answers to the situation that they are facing as a salesperson. And it can vary different for different people, different country, different culture. But all of us has in us the ability to sell, which I shared earlier about us being children, able to actually sell to our parents. So That's how the book is being written.
Great. And then the last chapter of the book is about emotional intelligence. So, and here we learn lessons about emotional intelligence from Cleopatra. So, what are those lessons?
So Cleopatra is a very interesting person. So despite what Hollywood has shown us with famous actress like Elizabeth Taylor being Cleopatra, history has told us that Cleopatra is not that beautiful of a lady. She's above average or average, but she's not too tall. So she's not your standard beauty kind of a woman. But yet, she's able to convince two almost dictators, Roman generals, to throw their lot with her because she's able to have this transformative power of getting them to build their shared vision with her. And she has this political will, skill, actually, so to speak, to, I wouldn't say force them, but somehow convince them that their future lies with her. And Mark Antony could have seen it. I mean, Julius Caesar threw his lot with her, and yet Julius Caesar faced death. And Mark Antony, yet still convinced that his future is belong to Cleopatra. Now, because Cleopatra has mastered political skill, but the key to political skill or the is actually the ability to master yourself, which is emotional intelligence. And emotional intelligence is nothing but actually, if you want others to obey you, you must first obey yourself. If you cannot even obey yourself, then how can you get others to obey you? And the path to that is actually through emotional intelligence. And Cleopatra, in my book, I have actually shared how she managed to do that. And then with the psychological explanation, I have a psychology explanation of how that happens. And you can actually, I've quoted Daniel Coleman, which describes emotions. Know an intelligence as being made out of five components. One is self-awareness of what you can and cannot do. Self-regulation, you need to be able to regulate yourself, control yourself. Motivation, empathy, and social skills. So, in order to wield political power upon others, you should master yourself, which is actually these five components here: self-awareness, self-regulation, motivation, empathy, and social skills, which I believe Cleopatra has all of them, and she's a master of all these five components. Imagine she got Mark Antony to kill her own sister. She got Julius Caesar to kill her husband, who is her brother, or to actually achieve power through political skills, and she has a very strong emotional intelligence.
Right. Well, that does show that there is a lot we can learn about sales from ancient Egypt. So I would encourage our listeners to grab a copy of the book and read the well all of the chapters because there is a lot of wisdom in all of them. But Ivan, I've got one final question for you to end this really interesting conversation. So if you had to choose the most important message that you cover in the book, the message that anyone should read or should hear, what would that be?
That would be selling with kindness. So in ancient Egypt, there's no death for an ancient Egyptian because there's life after death. And the promise of afterlife is so much more better than life itself that the ancient Egyptians prepared themselves for the afterlife because in the afterlife, they don't have to work, they will eat they're full, they never need to worry about food, they never need to worry about labor. So from the lowly Egyptian to the high of the Pharaoh, everyone aspired to go into this paradise. Now, the entry to that paradise is for everyone. The qualification to enter is also the same for everyone. Be it you're a Pharaoh or you're a farmer or you're a lowly Egyptian, the condition or requirement of entry is the same. It is upon death, the Egyptian's heart will be then put on the scale of Osiris, where that heart is actually weighed against a single feather of the ostrich. And if their heart doesn't tip the scale, balances the scale, they move on to the paradise. Now, if that heart, their heart, actually tipped the scales, that means they have they don't have good heart, their heart is full of bad thoughts and evil thoughts and all that, then they go into the oblivion of their soul. They throw into the they won't get to go into paradise, and their soul will be condemned forever. So what the ancient Egyptians said to us that you can be a pharaoh, you can be a lowly farmer, or a lowly Egyptian. It doesn't matter what is in your heart matters. So everyone, even the pharaoh, his biggest concern is, how do I keep my heart pure so that I can then balance the scale of Osiris?
Oh, I think that's a really good message to end our conversation also. Thank you very much, Ivan, for your time today. I found this conversation really interesting, and as I said, I would recommend to our listeners to grab a copy of the Pharaoh speech and read more about everything we talked about. But thanks very much for your time.
Thank you, Thea. It was a very wonderful conversation. And when I was speaking about the content, I was thinking about the time when I wrote the book and how the idea came. And it's kind of fun, actually, and also quite nostalgic to relive those writing moments. Well, thank you so much for bringing me back to the memory of the past.
Oh, we are very welcome. It was a great
Yeah.
pleasure for us. Thank you so much for joining us today. Make sure you keep an eye on our social media at Lit Publishing on LinkedIn, X, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. See you next time on Lit Radio Podcast.